How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Rain and Jays podcast. I am John Corrales along with Jay King, the most popular man on Twitter last night during the game. Spotted by the fans, people were clamoring. They want to know all about you, Jay. They, you know, you finally get your face out there a little bit. Big time.
People were creeping me out last night.
They want to know about your hair, your product routine. What is it? Is it like just a shampoo and conditioner in one, or do you have like a shampoo then condition? Is it a leave-in conditioner? Do you use like some gel? People want to know.
You know, this is the first time in my life I've ever had hair. I used to always shave it. So maybe I'll shave it again if it'll stop people from taking pictures of me at the game and blowing them up and wondering what I do to get ready for the Celtics games. I don't know if I like that trend.
You're dodging the question, but we'll let it go. You're clearly uncomfortable.
I can't give all the secrets away, John.
You're angling for a Head and Shoulders thing. Me, you, and Kelly Olynyk can do like a Head and Shoulders ad with Troy Polamalu.
If that's my hair comparison, my hair is no good thing.
All right. So the Celtics are now they're the fourth seed, tied with Atlanta, a half game behind Chicago for the third seed after their fifth straight win. So the Celtics are on a nice winning streak. They're winning these games fairly easily. And they have an all-star now in Isaiah Thomas. So this is as high a point of the season in our seasons of ups and downs that we've had so far.
Yep, the most they've ever been above 500, six games right now in the Brad Stevens era. They're playing offense, finally. They're playing defense. Over the last 10 games, they have 109.0 offensive rating, which would be third for the full season behind just the Warriors and the Thunder. So it might just be a fluke. Part of it is, you know, they haven't played the greatest competition. They've caught a few teams like the Wizards at the right time. But there are also signs saying that this is real. And that's the run coincides with Marcus Smart coming back to health, David Lee getting benched and going to small lineups. Like, there are a lot of signs that say that maybe they're not this good. I don't think they're quite as good as they're playing, especially offensively. But they've turned a corner, I think, and I do think that's real.
Yeah, I think there's a direct correlation between Marcus Smart's return to health and the Celtics doing what they're doing. And like you said, benching David Lee, and I know that David Lee's been a punching bag for me especially, but for a lot of fans. But it's not necessarily specifically just about David Lee. It's about shortening those rotations because he's gotten away from playing RJ Hunter and gotten away from playing James Young. And he's really shortened it down to that nine-man rotation. The starters are who they are, and that's going to be your starting lineup basically now moving forward. And Marcus Smart is coming off of the bench now, and that's fine. And he's playing in these, you know, clutch rotations down the stretch anyway. So it's almost like Marcus Smart's playing the Isaiah Thomas role in a defensive way. But I think that his health and the ability to put these rotations out there, like we've been saying in the past few shows, is really behind all of this, because now Brad Stevens can play the way he wants to play, and these guys are playing in positions that they're comfortable playing, and they're not asked to do too much or play, defend guys that they're not necessarily comfortable defending. So, yeah, I think that this is real in the sense that they're playing hard. They're not letting down. I don't think Marcus Smart especially is going to let them play down. I think he's just one of those guys that's just going to go out there and generally 99% of the time play his ass off. And so when he's out on the floor and he's playing that level of defense, it raises everybody else up. So I think it's real. And when they play better teams, they may not win as many of these games, but they're still going to be in there and give themselves a chance.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing when you look at their roster is that they have a lot of good players. And when they were playing weird lineups and more traditional lineups, I guess, sometimes their offense would get bogged down in the second unit. And that depth that should be their big differentiator kind of was misplaced a little bit. And it wasn't properly utilized. Right now, they're playing basically nine players. Sometimes Tyler Zeller will play as a 10th. Basically nine players. Eight of them are playing well. And then Kelly Olynyk is playing like a stud. So you've got like nine guys that are all thriving right now. Kelly Olynyk is just out of his mind. Isaiah Thomas is an all-star. And Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, and Jay Crowder will make your life hell. So they've kind of found the formula where it kind of feels like it was last year, but then they have upgrades like Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk, who's playing much better, and Marcus Smart, who now looks like he's improved, Avery Bradley, who's gotten better. So it's like last year's formula, but better.
Yeah. The couple of plays in the past two games, I forget who it was against Denver, but when there was a turnover or a missed shot and whoever it was bringing the ball up the right side, Marcus Smart was just hounding him. And then Avery Bradley got into the mix and forced the turnover, and it turned into ultimately an Avery Bradley three. And then last night, Marcus Smart was just pulling the ball, just like, I'm going to take that from you now, thank you, and going the other way with it. Like that level of defense that Smart and Bradley are playing together is pretty amazing. That right there is exactly what we were hoping for. When they're on the floor together, forget it. That you only like the elite point guards are going to do any damage against that level of defense. If you're not a really, really good ball handler, or if you're not going to give the ball up and move the ball around, they're going to just take it from you, which is amazing to watch.
The quotes from the last few games have been just opposing players and opposing coaches like Jesus, these guys are aggressive. After I think the Nuggets game, like Stevens was kind of disappointed. They had a poor fourth quarter. They ended up winning by eight, but it was like they were up. They had been up 22, kind of gave up a lot of threes down the stretch, and he was kind of disappointed with their defense. And then Emmanuel Mudiay was in the other locker room. He's like, man, I haven't ever seen that type of aggression. Like, we've played a lot of good teams and nobody has hit us like that. And so it was like the contrast between Stevens being like let down and the other point guard who's a rookie being like, that's the best defensive pressure I've ever seen. It was crazy. So Celtics, that second unit is looking good. And Avery Bradley has played a lot with the second unit. And he and Marcus Smart just ruin people. Kelly Olynyk has just been playing so strong, so aggressively. Over his last 102 minutes, they've outscored people by 80 points. That's like that's like a Stephen Curry MVP type on-off numbers on crack. So that can't possibly be sustainable. But he's playing great. The bench is playing great. Five-game winning streak. The Celtics are finally. This is their longest winning streak of the season. And it does feel like they've turned a corner. With another game against Orlando, which is very winnable and kind of a schedule that's set up for them to to push forward and maybe put a string together. And we've said that before, but this time, as we're saying, there are indications that kind of they have found the way they should be winning.
Yeah. Certain things that went into the letdowns before we're hoping no longer exist, or at least don't exist as the team is currently constituted. Some notes about the bench. Last night, they scored 62 points. Kevin O'Connor, who writes for 30 different outlets, I think.
At least. It might be more.
I mean, that guy, you talk about hustle. That guy is always writing. I joked last night, and I'm not even sure it's a joke anymore. At some point on every major basketball website, he's going to have like a live article at some point, and then something on Celtics blog too. So Kevin O'Connor tweeted, the Celtics are 19-7 when Kelly Olynyk attempts over 8 shots, 19-9 when he plays over 18 minutes, and 14-5 when his effective field goal percentage is over 50%. So Kelly is pretty important to this team. And we get into Kelly Olynyk a lot, but I think it's for good reason that when he's making a big leap forward, I think, this year, where he's starting to become a confident player. And that has always been, I think, his problem. That and you mentioned it last episode, that it's kind of between his head. It's him getting comfortable being a scorer because he hasn't grown up with that mentality, so now he's developing it. So that's nice. And a great quote from Brad Stevens last night where he says, there are times you want to play that second unit 18 straight minutes. He feels comfortable with these guys in this spot. And I have to bring up the guy that is deserves a lot of credit during this win streak, and a guy that I've never given a lot of credit to. And I'm going to start with a tweet from Bailey, who asks, any chance of giving ET some love? Do you think the C's will re-sign him? And if so, on what kind of deal? So here's your ET love. Evan Turner has been really good over this 5-game win streak. 13.5 points, 5.5 assists. His true shooting percentage is up over 65%. He hasn't taken a three since the Chicago game. This is a nice little stretch for Evan Turner. So I have elevated him to I don't hate him right now, which is high praise for me for Evan Turner. I don't hate him right now.
I mean, the guy has played an awesome stretch off the bench, and he's just in your I don't hate him mode.
That's
which goes a long way toward explaining where he used to be.
Yes, exactly.
He's been really good offensively and defensively. He's been all over the passing lanes. He's become a much, much better. Like when he was with Indiana, his reputation was just horrible as a defender. And then he signed with Boston, and he's kind of gotten better and better to the point where now he's a plus. He allows them to switch. He's in the passing lanes. He's aggressive. And then he can help turn that into offense at the other end. So he's been very good for their second unit lately. He killed Mario Hezonja in the post. That was just cruel almost. And he's taking good shots. As far as the other part of the question, do you think they'll re-sign him? I'm not sure. I would actually be kind of surprised, I think. I think they would prefer to sign someone like Evan Turner who can do a lot of the things he does with some of his size on the wing, but someone who can also shoot. Because he's such a bad outside shooter, that really hinders your offense and makes it so you can't really play certain combinations with him, I think.
Okay. Well, yeah, I agree. I agree that he's playing really well right now. But as far as re-signing him, I don't think I wouldn't think that's high on their list for the same reasons, that you want somebody to at least be able to be a threat from the outside. That's what the league is. But it depends on also what moves, what other moves they might make. And maybe they'll find that he is useful in this role moving forward, you know, off the bench. So it's to be seen as far as whether they re-sign him. But
yeah, he's one of those guys who you fill out the rest of the roster and then you see whether he makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know that the rest of the league is really clamoring for Evan Turner and whether he'll be in high demand this offseason. If another team swoops in and decides they need Evan Turner, then I guess, then good luck. I don't think the Celtics are going to put up a big fight or overpay for him to keep him. I have no pulse on the rest of the league, but his body of work is much longer than his tenure here in Boston, and there may be an attitude that he's working in Boston because of the system in Boston, and if you don't have that same system and the same players, who knows what you're going to really get. So we'll have to see what the market is. It's going to be hard to say, but look, at least he's playing at a level now where re-signing him isn't the worst idea in the world. Where
John has come around. John is coming around.
I didn't say it was a good idea. I didn't say it was a good idea. I'm just saying that earlier in the season, it was the worst idea in the world. And now it's not necessarily the worst idea in the world. But yeah. Look, this is a tenuous position for Turner with me. It doesn't take much. One bad game, and all of this goes away.
I think just one missed three. Like the next three he takes, if it doesn't miraculously go in, you're gonna go ranting again. It won't even take one bad game. Just one 3-pointer taken.
He doesn't even have to shoot it. As soon as he sets up for it, it's all just. I don't know. You're not a Simpsons fan. I was going to make a Simpsons reference. But for those Simpsons fans out there, the episode where Bart takes over Camp Krusty and, you know, everything's going well. Bart's away. Homer's losing weight. And everything's great. And then there's a news report from Camp Krusty. And he says, and Camp Brockman says, let's go. I've got an exclusive interview with the leader. And Homer says, don't be the boy. Don't be the boy. Don't be the boy. And as soon as Bart Simpson leans forward, his gut pops out. His hair falls out. That's going to be me with Evan Turner taking the next three. I'm going to say, don't be the three. Don't be the three. He's going to take the three, and everything's going to fall apart for me. So that was a Simpsons reference for everybody but Jay King, who doesn't appreciate the awesomeness of that reference, because that was on point.
Perfectly on point. I'll give you that, even though I don't know anything about the Simpsons.
You have to watch God, kill me with these things.
I was never a cartoon type of guy. I don't know what it was. I just liked my shows to have real people in them. It's just how I was.
You're
how real. I am, I guess.
You kill me. You kill me. How are we friends?
I'm deeply sorry.
Okay, moving on. Another big thing. Let's go back to the Isaiah Thomas All-Star. We got to talk about Isaiah Thomas being an All-Star. Because this guy had like perma smile on his face, and he's always kind of like happy-go-lucky when he's playing. Like, he's not like the angry Russell Westbrook or Kevin Garnett type where he gets the scowl on his face. Like, seeing Isaiah Thomas smile during a game is it happens every day. But that smile last night was so much bigger. Like, this guy was really, really happy to have achieved this goal. And so, first of all, congratulations, Isaiah Thomas. Very well deserved. Absolutely needed to be part of this, part of the All-Star team. And of course, who's there to congratulate him? Money Mayweather, front row, and of course, with Mayweather comes a scene. So, Jay, you saw the scene. Take it away.
Well, first of all, at halftime, he sat there, and I want to say about 30 or 40 people just swarmed him. Like, all of a sudden, like maybe a minute after the halftime buzzer, there were 30 or 40 fans just like swarming around, looking to take a picture, maybe just looking to get to see him. I don't know what it was. A little while later, Isaiah Thomas comes over. They just like hang out the rest of halftime. Isaiah didn't even really warm up. He just kind of took pictures with Floyd Mayweather and chopped it up with his good friend. And then after the game was when things really turned into a spectacle. So the reporters finish up interviews in the locker room. We come outside. We run straight into Floyd Mayweather. So, of course, we want to talk to Floyd about his good friend, Isaiah Thomas. He is walking out of the gym toward the exit. We go up, ask if we can ask him a few questions. He says, sure. So there's like 8 or 9 Celtics reporters who hardly know, or at least I don't know too much about Floyd. I know he's an undefeated boxing champion. I tried not to watch him box because, man, he boxed a boring style. But so we're all like following him, and he's walking away toward the elevator. And we ask him questions about Isaiah. Everything's like somewhat normal, as normal as you can get following the greatest boxer, maybe the greatest boxer in history, out of the TD Garden hallway. The last question Floyd Mayweather is asked what he thinks the All-Star game nod means to Isaiah Thomas. And he says something about always believing in Isaiah Thomas, which was cool, whatever. And then his friends are all waiting in the elevator behind him. He's like standing in the middle so that the door doesn't close. So he says he believes in Isaiah Thomas. And then he says, you know, this one time a few years ago, I bought him a Bentley as a birthday gift. Yeah, that was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And then step back, doors closed, he was gone. It was like something, like a scene out of him, like the perfect exit, where out of nowhere, asked about the All-Star game, he just talked about giving Isaiah Thomas a Bentley, and then poof, he was gone. it was like it could have been in a Dave Chappelle skit, and like he was Prince or something. It was unreal, just surreal moment. But I do want to go back to Isaiah being an All-Star, which is far more important than Floyd's ridiculous exit.
It would have been better. The only way that would have been better is if he had thrown something to the ground, that thing that makes the big puff of smoke. And he disappeared that way. That's the only way that story would have been better. You're like, oh, yeah, and then he threw that thing and poof.
He disappeared. Or if he hadn't thrown it and the smoke had just appeared. Which, honestly, like if you'd seen the scene, that it wouldn't have been too surprising if smoke had appeared. It was just a weird, weird scene. But I do want to go back to Isaiah being an All-Star. I just think it's so cool how appreciative he was of it. A lot of guys kind of act like they're too cool to fully appreciate it. And he wasn't too cool at all. He talked about how much it meant to him for weeks leading up to the All-Star game. Whenever someone asked him about it, yeah, this means a real lot. I've been working my whole life for this. And his journey is just crazy. When he tried to leave Washington, the scouts he asked for feedback told him, gave him pessimistic feedback, told him he should go back to school, and then he left anyway. He was the last pick in the draft. Sacramento kind of didn't want him. They wanted to play Jimmer Fredette, who was their lottery pick. He had to fight and scrap his way into the rotation there. Finally became a starter, and they never thought he was good enough to be a starter, so they decided to sign Darren Collison, of all people, instead. And he ends up in Phoenix, where someone finally wants him, and then Phoenix trades him away 3 months later. And now he's with the Celtics, and it's worked out perfectly. And he's the shortest All-Star since 1979.
It's an amazing road. It really is an amazing road. You hear it laid out like that from the decision to leave school to the Sacramento crap to the Phoenix debacle, where what the hell were they doing with all of those point guards? They were, it's like David Kahn was running the team, and they, I don't know, it was great because I heard him talk at length about this on Woj's podcast, which he said how appreciative he was to be in this situation and how appreciative the Celtics were that they were able to get him. And get him for nothing, by the way. Really, they gave up nothing to get Isaiah Thomas. That was still an offshoot of the Paul Pierce Kevin Garnett trade, because they used the trade exception. I mean, traded player exception to absorb his salary.
So, and then they used the Cleveland pick, which they had gotten in the Tyler Zeller deal, which was also the trade exception, right?
Yeah, they got the pick from Cleveland that they gave up to Phoenix. And then so they gave up, they had nothing of their own that they gave up. Everything that they gave up for Isaiah Thomas came from the other trades.
Yeah.
So they basically got Isaiah Thomas for nothing. They got an all-star for nothing.
Yep, and they still have those three picks coming. What a trade.
I mean, that is, when you think back to the reset button, when you hit that reset button, Danny Ainge, it just amazing work. That was amazing work, because the Rondo deal turned into Jay Crowder, and the Pierce and Garnett deal turned into Isaiah Thomas and those picks. And just and more. I have to go back and look at all of the tentacles that this from that trade. But basically, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder from the reset button from the championship years, and three of the most coveted picks in the league right now. So I guess the next question is, what's next? And that's what people are asking us about, because at RLS003 asked us, based on Sherrod Blakely's vague rumor of keeping an eye on Gallinari, what would you be willing to give up? And then, I love this Twitter account, Dumb Celtics Fans, asks, because 8 of the 9 rotation guys are pretty solid, is it pointless to grab a solid guy via trade? People are asking about these trades. And I think, as we've been saying, would it be pointless to grab a solid guy? Yeah, if you're just going one for one. So if people are saying trade Sully straight up for another solid player, doesn't necessarily mean much. Like Jeff Teague is a name that's being thrown out there. Well, Jeff Teague is you know, people know who Jeff Teague is, and he's had big playoff runs. But when you look at his numbers, there's a reason why Atlanta's willing to give him up. There's a reason why they're looking to move forward with a different point guard and just move on. Teague doesn't move the needle for me, and there's no reason to. What are you going to give up for Jeff Teague? You're going to give up who? Avery Bradley? He's basically Avery Bradley in terms of production. So that doesn't move the needle for me. So yeah, it'd be pointless to grab a solid guy especially when you've got a guy that's making not much money and is performing really well. So the rumors that are out there, Horford, Gallinari, people are throwing Blake Griffin's name around. Zach Lowe loves to throw Jay Crowder's name into the mix of trading guys away. You have to give up something to get something. So I don't know, Jay. Who do you think might be out there that is gettable, and what's worth giving up? Are we gonna give up Kelly Olynyk on his upswing? Are we gonna give up Jay Crowder on his upswing? Is that palatable to you?
I think the one name I hear that's really intriguing is Horford, because Horford is really, really good. But it's a weird dynamic there, because he's going to be a free agent, and you don't know, are the Hawks really going to blow things up? Like, I've heard a couple reports about that. One was from Woj, another was from Chris Mannix, and it's just weird that they're in third or fourth place in the East. The East is wide open with the exception of Cleveland, and Cleveland is like they just fired their coach. They're in a weird place right now. So the East is kind of wide open, and they have a good team. Are they going to really blow it up? Do they think Horford's going to leave in free agency? Obviously, they have the Schroeder Teague element, where Schroeder's really outgrowing his backup role, and Teague is kind of just the same player he was last year, kind of similar to what he was the year before, which is really good. But I don't know. If I were their GM, I wouldn't, I don't think, blow that up. They just won 60 games last year.
I know.
It's crazy. It would be crazy if they did blow it up.
But
at the same point, like, are they really title contenders? Were they ever contenders? So I don't know. Their rise was weird, and if they blow it up, it'll be kind of weird too.
Here's the thing that you have to think of as a GM. When you're a team like Atlanta, I throw Washington into that mix. These teams that are either good or were supposed to be good or maybe on the cusp of being good. Washington's had health issues. You know, Bradley Beal hasn't been able to play much. The point is, you look at the landscape of the NBA, and there aren't many teams that are selling, which means the teams that are going to be selling they're going to be getting a lot more. They're getting a lot more value because there are a lot of buyers out there. Teams like Boston, teams in that Eastern Conference mix that think that they're one really good player away are going to be looking to acquire these guys. Teams out West that are a player away. So there's a lot of potential buyers out there. A lot of teams that are trying to improve their chances. So if you're on the cusp and you wouldn't normally be a seller, but you look at the landscape and you be honest with yourself, Atlanta, and say, are we going to make a run to the finals? Are we really going to be a championship team? Or are we going to be in a position here with a guy like Horford that teams really going to want? He's still really, really good. Can you get a really, really good return for him because the market will demand a big return for Horford? Can you just say, now's the time to hit the button, that reset button, and get more for Horford than you thought you could get, and just go on from there? I think that that's something you have to consider. Washington especially, I don't know if Washington's going to be smart enough to do this, because they're one of those teams that feels like they need to make the playoffs, and they need to build on imagine that fan base a year after the Paul Pierce. You know, you're making that run and you let Pierce go and you think these guys are ready to take that mantle and be the second best team in the East and make a serious run and maybe get to the conference finals. But you look at, if you're not going to fire Randy Whitman, which I don't know why he's still around, are you going to maybe sell one of these young players? Maybe you don't keep Bradley Beal. Maybe you trade somebody away and you get a huge return. And maybe you can still keep a young core, but get a lot of things to build for your future that way. So I think that there's going to be a surprising team. This whole thing's building up to me thinking that there's going to be a surprising team out there that sells that you didn't think was going to sell. And whether now Danny Ainge can kind of pull those backdoor quiet talks to say, hey, I'll give you blah, blah, blah for your really good player. So it depends on the level of player, what's palatable. That number one pick, that Brooklyn pick next year, I hear a lot of people say, well, let's just see what the pick is, and then we'll decide if we want to trade it. But if the pick ends up being like the fifth pick for some reason, then that no longer has any value. Trading that pick before the lottery, if they are going to do it, it's that potential for the number one overall pick that's really going to give it the value. If you sit there and say, oh, well, it's the fourth pick, so I don't want it anymore. Well, guess what? Other GMs aren't going to want it either. It suddenly loses a lot of value. So a lot of tough questions that need to be answered. Are you going to give that pick up? Are you going to give up Jay Crowder now when he's done so much for who? For what level player out there? For Blake Griffin? That doesn't, I don't know. Would you trade for Blake Griffin right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Blake Griffin's a top 10 or 15 player. Blake Griffin is awesome. Blake Griffin and Isaiah Thomas alone would give you probably a top 10 offense. And then you'd still have a lot of other, obviously you would need to fill up the hole on the wing, but that's a guy that can attract other stars. That's a guy, he's really good. Yeah, he shouldn't punch equipment managers and stuff. But, I mean, he can score. He's a great passer. You can run your offense through him. He is very good. And I don't think the formula has fit particularly well, maybe, with the Clippers. They've been really good with him on the court. They've been – and he's been a huge part of that. He's top 10 or 15 player in the league. And okay. He's awesome. And he's still 26. So, yeah, you could trade for Blake Griffin, you trade for Blake Griffin. I don't think Doc Rivers will sell off Blake Griffin. And if he does, I don't think it will be for, like, the package that Boston can put together. Even though they can put together a package that could maybe help Los Angeles, give them more depth, more shooting, more wing play, which they badly need. But he doesn't strike me as someone who would downgrade from that, or not downgrade, but shift from that big star to like three helpful pieces like the Celtics could give. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong there.
I don't. Well, first of all, I don't think Blake Griffin is going by the trade deadline. That would be absolutely shocking to me, because I don't think that's what Doc Rivers really signed up for. So they might make another move. I wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers made a move to shore up their bench or something, or try to shore up their bench. But Blake Griffin, if he does get moved, wouldn't be till the summer anyway. I think that's if he comes back healthy and they flail and fail in the playoffs again, then they have to do something. And even Doc will have to sit there and say, we got to do something. But he's not going to blow it up. He's not going to rebuild to win now. I mean, he left Boston to avoid that exact situation, the rebuild situation. He's not going to go there and do it in Los Angeles. He wants to win another title. And he wanted to have control of the whole franchise, and he's not going to sit there and say, well, I screwed it up. I had Blake Griffin, I had DeAndre Jordan, and I had Chris Paul, and I couldn't do it. He's not going to admit that. So maybe Blake over the summer to fill out some of those, like you said, the useful pieces, but it's not going to happen until at least July. I don't know who's going to go ahead.
Blake's far-fetched. I think Gallinari would make a lot of sense because size, scoring, he gives them a lot of things they need on the wing. He could help their offense. But you don't just make a trade to make a trade. You make a trade because you're upgrading somewhere. You make a trade because you can get a Horford or a Gallinari or someone who lifts your talent. And it is a clear difference maker. That's the only reason to make a trade right now. Obviously, Ainge will be out there looking for those things, but he's in a good position. You know, he's got all those Nets picks. And I do disagree with the thing you said about if the pick falls to five, it's useless. When the pick fell to five in 2007, that became Ray Allen, which then allowed them to convince Kevin Garnett to come to Boston. So that number five pick in 2007 turned into a championship, basically.
No, right. But my point was that the appeal of that pick now is that it could be the number one overall pick. Once it becomes the fifth pick, let's say, then that it does lose some appeal to some to some people. I mean, that's, if you sit there and you know you're getting the fifth pick, if you're the Thunder and you're a playoff team and you're at the bottom of the draft and now you want to go to the top of the draft, then yeah. But if you're a team that is hoping to score the top pick or a top two or three pick, and it's not, you know it's not in there, then it loses a little bit of its value. That's all I'm saying. I didn't say it was useless, but I think it loses that value.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the number one pick anymore. But, yeah, the trade deadline will be interesting. I think they'll be in on a lot of people. I think a lot of teams have to make decisions about what the heck they're doing, because in the East, there's a whole bunch of teams, like, in the middle where they're close to being, they're not close to winning the conference, but they're in the playoff race. You've got, as you said, the Wizards, who are in a weird situation. You've got the Magic, who, what are they like? They're still rebuilding. They've lost 8 in a row now. What's going on over there?
Yeah, that's a tough.
What are they going to do? So, yeah, it's interesting. Teams do, I think, have decisions to make about what the hell their direction is. Even if you look like Sacramento, like, we think they're probably going to push it for the playoffs, but they're 20-26. That team needs to make all types of moves. But everybody except like 5 or 6 teams. No, probably more like 4 teams. 4 teams can consider themselves title contenders or close to it. I include the Thunder in that and the Cavaliers. And then all the rest of the teams are somewhat in the middle ground. They need more. So it's going to be fascinating, this trade deadline. There's a lot of teams in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. So there,
and the middle is really far away from the top this year. Like, it is so clear that Golden State, San Antonio are the top tier, and then Oklahoma City's third, Cleveland's probably fourth, and then there's just major, major drop off to everybody else. I don't think anyone else has a shot.
No, I agree that there's, you know, even if the Celtics, look, Toronto is the second seed in the East right now. What's the difference between Toronto and Cleveland? What is the gap between Toronto and Cleveland? That's a wide gap. If those two teams met in the Eastern Conference Finals,
bloodbath.
Yeah, would there be any hope? Maybe it'd be a 5-game series.
Although the Raptors have quietly won 10 games in a row, and they've been really good.
But I don't know.
They might be stumbling into like that Hawks formula where they've kind of got like a regular season thing going on. But yeah, in a playoff series, I think Cleveland would wax them regardless. Although, weird issues in Cleveland. LeBron and Tristan Thompson screaming at each other. Kyrie getting involved. There's some weird chemistry problems over there. Nobody has a full-on screaming match like that with a teammate on the court. Nobody. Wait till they're going into the locker room. Wait till you get in the locker room. Hash it out in there. Don't do it in public view so that everyone can ask you questions about it. Dumb.
It went all the way up the floor. Then it stopped. They didn't even get to the tunnel. They stopped before the tunnel. They didn't even take it out of public view. They stopped and continued on the court, which is, I don't know. That Cleveland situation is really interesting because now it's definitely on the players. The Blatt stuff is out of the way. You can't blame it on anybody else. The players got what they wanted.
Although, if you could blame it on a coach, it would be Ty Lue, right? Like, the guy who's never coached before, who, like, 3 years ago wasn't even an assistant coach in Boston. Like, he was a director of player development, I think. He was, like, the guy who sat behind the bench. And so he's still in his 30s. If there ever was going to be a coach you could still have an excuse with, it's Ty Lue. Although, obviously, they wanted him. LeBron James and his camp were obviously okay with that. But if you're ever still going to have excuses, it would be with him, right?
But the bottom line is, that's what the players wanted. That's what LeBron wanted. He got the guy he wanted. And if the guy he wanted can't handle the situation, then that's LeBron's fault. Because that's LeBron, like, that's he's running the show. And as I think Woj put it, you don't change the copy paper in the Cleveland front office without LeBron James knowing about it. He runs that show. So I don't give a shit what David Griffin says. I don't give a shit what anybody else says. LeBron, everybody knows LeBron runs that show. LeBron got the coach that he wanted, and if the whole thing falls apart, then this is – it looks bad for him. And that's it. And so, I mean, ideally, from a Celtics perspective, you want to look at those guys and watch them kind of still not get their chemistry together, fall apart, and then get completely dominated. They're probably going to the NBA Finals because there's no real competition in the East for them, as good as the East is. And then you go to the finals and you watch them get swept. Like that would be great. But I digress. Let's move on to some Twitter questions. Let's see. Tyler asks, what's changed with the offense over the last few games? It's been terrific. I think part of what's changed with the offense has been the defense, and the defense leading to good offense because they've been scoring a ton of points. What have they scored over the past few games? They've put up, let's see, the lowest scoring output in this win streak was 110 points. The last time they didn't score 100 points, wow, all the way back to the Memphis game at the beginning of the month where they scored 98. Since then, 114, they had a 119-point game, 116, 113 last night. They've been putting up a lot of points. So part of it has been the defense getting easy baskets, and some of these threes are falling. Kelly Olynyk, I think, hitting a bunch of threes has helped. You know, some of these guys are just hitting their shots.
Yeah, I think there are a few factors. We talked about the rotation before. It's finally makes sense, and they've gone to the more skilled lineups, more Kelly Olynyk, which has been a really good thing. Marcus Smart is starting to get his health back, which is huge. He's finally hitting shots again. He's more aggressive going to the paint. He's snatching the ball out of people's hands and stealing all our Halloween candy before running off to the other end for an easy bucket. He's made a big difference. So there's a lot of things going on. So I think the biggest thing, or one of the biggest things at least, is they're not having those lulls anymore. When it's starting with the starters have done a really good job offensively. They have Isaiah Thomas, so they're going to continue scoring the ball. And then the bench comes in, and there's not that lull anymore. The bench is working. Kelly Olynyk has been huge. Jonas Jerebko has helped. Everybody's sharing the ball. It's just they're playing good basketball right now. It's been fun to watch. But some of it is just making shots. But some of it is the shots are going to better shooters. Turner's not shooting them anymore. Cylinder's now shooting longer twos, which I could do without. But, you know, whatever, a couple of those a game don't kill you. The more the threes are going to Olynyk, Bradley, now Smart, who's finally starting to make them, Thomas, Crowder, and those are good shooters. So if your good shooters take shots, your offense is going to be better. That's just how it works.
No, that's true. No David Lee shots. No, Mike Dinan asks, you know, RJ has played 11 minutes in the past month. Hype train derailed by performance or simply a shorter rotation?
All those rookies, no clue what they're going to be. I mean, you keep hearing promising things about Jordan Mickey in the D League. He still hasn't played a meaningful minute. RJ
All-Star Jordan Mickey.
D League All-Star Jordan Mickey, that is correct. But you keep hearing positive things about him. Still hasn't played second. RJ Hunter, you know, he showed some promising signs earlier in the year. He's shooting 33.8% from the field, 24.5% from the three-point arc in limited time. Terry Rozier, he's really athletic. Clearly wasn't ready when he did play earlier this season. So I don't know what they have in those guys. I have no clue what they have. Brad Stevens has decided none of them are worthy of rotation minutes, And the way the bench is playing, I don't think you could make an argument that any of them really deserve to play right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, as much of a RJ Hunter fan as I am, as promising as I think his career could be, there's no reason to play him right now, especially if he's struggling with his shot. So let him do his thing in the D League. That's fine. There's no reason to rush it. They don't need him. So to answer the question, I think part of it is his performance. Obviously, if he was ready to play and hitting all of his shots, then yeah, he'd get minutes. But the shorter rotation is what we've been clamoring for a while. The team has wanted the shorter rotation, the set rotation. And now that everybody's healthy, that Marcus Smart is healthy, that he can do that. So yeah, it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of performance, a little bit shortening the rotation. Speaking of Smart, Angelo asks, how much do you think Smart's leg still bothers him? Now, Angelo says he doesn't seem that Smart has any lift, especially on his jumper. I haven't noticed a lack of lift, and I think Marcus Smart seems pretty healthy.
Yeah, ask Evan Fournier if he's healthy. That poor guy was bottled up. That one possession, Smart chased him over a screen, crossovers, spin moves, swiped it away from him. So, yeah, ask Fournier if Marcus Smart is healthy, and Fournier will tell you that that man's ankle is feeling just fine.
Yeah, man, that was such a great defensive possession. I mean, so great to watch him play. And I don't know, I guess that shows the level of basketball nerd that you are, because those of us who were tweeting last night all in a row about how awesome that was, not a lot of, I guess more casual fans might not just see the whole thing. They'll see the steal, but that whole possession of the way he was hounding him, the footwork and the position and the use of his body and the timing of swiping the ball away. Just Marcus Smart could be such a good individual defender. It's scary. And between him and Bradley together, oh God, so good. So good. So the answer, I don't think his leg is bothering him, Angelo, but thanks for the question. I think he's fine. So
he's finally fine. I mean, the ankle bothered him for a while. He wasn't shooting well, but he's gradually gotten better, and now I think he's full go.
Yeah, yeah. So looks good.
Yeah, finally hitting shots, which is yes. Must be good for him to see.
All right. Well, I think we've hit it all. I don't hate Evan Turner. That's the big takeaway.
John does not hate Evan Turner. And
the Celtics are playing well. So
And the Celtics are playing well. Five-game win streak, longest of the season. Something about, mid-January that Brad Stevens' teams have loved the last couple of years.
Yeah. Now, I just hope that this love doesn't go away, because it has a tendency. This has been such a good show. Such a positive show. Last time we did such a positive show, the whole thing went to shit. They played LA and they played Brooklyn and everything fell apart.
So, but hey, I think you deserve credit for Olynyk's recent play. Ever since you ranted about him after that Knicks game where he got benched, he's been a killer, absolute killer.
It's basically, I'm the MVP. I should be an all-star.
You determine the Celtics' future. And so I think you've determined they're going to lose like three or four straight, because every time you rave about someone, it goes the other way.
Turner tomorrow is going to have the worst game of the season. And
he's going to take like 12 threes. He's going to be spotting it up 5 feet behind the arc, letting him fly.
Oh God. Okay. Well, forget it. Whatever. It's all in the universe's hands now. We're going to wrap up the show. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you next week on the Rain and Jays podcast.